Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn McGeek, back in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning for February 2nd, 2011, episode 68, sponsored by Back on Track. Good morning, Horse World.
Across a 2,000-mile stretch, the colossal winter storm carving a crippling path.
It's burning low upon my tabletop. Snow.
Oh, Jesus! Listen to that! Son of a... That's unbelievable!
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man,
with snowfall rates at times 2 inches an hour and winds gusting to almost 50 miles an hour, it's tough to keep the roads clear, and that's the case here in Oklahoma City. For you, Jamie. Good news.
What is that?
Punxsutawney Phil did not see his shadow this morning, and spring is supposed to come early. Yay!
I hear it feels like spring there today, huh?
Yeah, it kind of does. Yep. It's about 50-mile-an-hour winds and 27 degrees out, and we have it good compared to most of the country, and, you know, we have a lot of listeners that are affected by this blizzard right now. There's, you know, we know where a lot of our listeners live because of Facebook, and I know a lot of them are buried in snow right now.
Oh, poor things. I would like you to know it is actually really cold here as well and really incredibly windy for the past 2 days. So we are feeling the bite of winter a little bit here in Phoenix as well.
Well, you got to feel it over the weekend, though. You had a little experience with what 6-foot piles of snow and 11 degrees feels like.
And I never got to make my snow angel because apparently the snow is just way too dirty there to lay in and roll around in. So, I never got to do that.
You don't want to do a snow angel in Philadelphia snow. That's never a good idea. Let's go to Jennifer and find out what's on today's show, and then we have a lot of catching up to do.
On today's show, we're talking with Sean Flaherty about his recent induction into the reigning Hall of Fame, and we'll be prattling endlessly about the Horse Radio Network trip to Ada in Philadelphia, and then we're going to be checking in with thehorse.com about biosecurity. Don't know what it is? Stay tuned. And we're also going to be trading weather stories with our listeners, so give us a holler with what you're up to in this lovely weather, and yes, those of you not affected by the storm, we want to hear from you, too. Give us a little hope. And then we're going to be getting the latest about the social media awards. Don't forget to vote for your favorite morning show. That's us. And then we're going to be gabbing some more about the cool stuff and fascinating people we met at Ada.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. You know, we would love to hear from you if you're snowed in. There's some of our regular listeners probably can't listen to us because they're out of power. But if you're in that blizzard belt, we'd love to get a report from you. Just give us a call at 347-637-3238. How are you making out? How are the horses making out? We would love to hear all about that. And if your website has been nominated for the Social Media Awards, because we're going to have them on from England a little bit later in the show. Give us a call and put in a plug for your website. Ask for votes. We'll get you on the air for that as well. Well, it was quite an adventure this weekend, but, you know, I want to get to that with you, Jamie, but we have our first caller already, so we'll get over to looks like Jackie is calling in just a moment here to give us a weather update. And I wanted to remind everybody, it is 347-637-3238. And if you can't listen at home, you can listen on your phone. Your phone might still work. You can listen on your cell phone, your Droid, or your iPhone. Just go to horsesinthemorning.mobi, horsesinthemorning.mobi. Let's go to Jackie and find out what's going on. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Glenn. Hi, Jamie.
Hello.
You're in northern Ohio, right?
I am in northeast Ohio, and it is nasty.
So what's nasty?
Well, we had about probably 12 inches of snow on the ground, and then it rained all day yesterday, which kind of melted the snow and then froze the snow and then froze more on top of it. So we have a bunch of snow buried under a lovely, very thick crust of ice that is exceedingly slippery because it continues to rain. So I was at my barn last night, and it was very treacherous because I had to bring in hay from a separate hay building, and it was like trying to carry hay across an ice skating rink. A little bit crazy. And it's so bad here that about half of my county does not have power, including my house. So there's no heat. There's a tree down in my backyard. My basement is full of water. And so my hubby and I came to my office today because we're still good in downtown. So we are camped out here with heat and power and the internet.
Oh my gosh.
Now, it's a little crazy. Glenn, this is what's amazing about Jackie here is that she says all of this, and my basement is flooded, and I have no heat. And it's like you're skipping along down a sunny road, right? You're telling this story, and it's like... You're so positive, but my God. Okay, so the snow is there, then freezes on top of it. So when you break through the ice, you actually fall into more snow, and you have no heat, no power, and your basement's flooded, and you sound like you're just having the time of your life. Everything's great.
It's kind of funny. I can't do anything about it, and I got to bring my hubby to work today, so hey.
He's finding the silver lining.
He's a teacher, so I'm assuming he wasn't doing much teaching today.
That is correct. All of the schools in our area are closed, including all of the colleges and universities. And when the colleges close, you know it's bad. This is actually the second day. Everything was closed yesterday. It's closed again today. It's really, really windy out there. So if you get on a nice icy sidewalk, you can just stand there and let the wind blow you across the ice and go for a nice ride.
Jackie, how long have you lived up there?
I was here for 4 years in college and have lived here 5 years since then.
Do you ever remember it being this bad?
No. I had thought that last winter was bad, and I remember you did this same talk earlier in the season back in November about the worst winter you could remember, and last year was a bad one when we got, you know, normally I think we get like 30 inches of snow on average, and last winter we got like 60 inches of snow. My entire barn was snowed in. We couldn't open any of the doors except the one people door, and I thought that was really crazy. This is definitely worse. We have not had anything like this that I can remember.
Jeez. Well, I think you have just officially declared it the worst winter ever in Canton, Ohio.
Yeah, it's pretty bad out there.
Well, thank you, Jackie, for calling in and giving us the report. We appreciate it. Good luck. Stay warm. I don't know what you're going to do about the basement.
Wait till the power comes back on. It'll dry out with the dehumidifier.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Oh, that's from Northeast Ohio, Canton, the home of the Football Hall of Fame. which is buried under a layer of ice.
I was going to say, I bet they're closed today.
So this weekend we went over to Philadelphia for the American Equestrian Trade Association show. We had a great time. You and Helena seemed to make fast friends and have a good time.
Yeah, we are cut from the same cloth is really what that was all about. That girl is, as you know, I had a blast with her. She's fantastic. So the thing is, I want to point out that the AETA is the American Equine Trade Association, which means that pretty much the tack shop down the street from you that is awesome goes to this thing to buy their items. Just if people don't know what it is, it's this huge setup where everybody that sells an equine product is there, and then tack shops mill around and decide what they're going to put in their stores. So it was like candy, being in a candy store, and I was seven, okay? so was Helena. So Helena and I went a little wild. We were very excited about all the stuff, and I would like to congratulate you, Glenn, because you had the only woman who had any self-control. She wanted to, and she shopped with us, but she exercised self-control, and for that, I give Jennifer, a golf clap, because she probably spent a lot less money than Helena and I did. That's what credit cards are for, though, okay? Come on.
You guys did have a lot of fun, and I wanted to mention that we posted up on our Facebook page the video of us getting blown up by the airbags, by the .2 air vests. That was posted up there this morning. So if you haven't seen that yet, stop by. It was funny watching it the second time, too. Your face was that was very funny.
I'm sorry. First of all, let me back up a little bit. First of all, those two guys that run the .2 air vest thing are incredibly good looking. I mean, every woman, I noticed that as we were getting blown up, there was all these women standing around watching, and I know that they were not watching the air vest get blown up on us, Glenn. Let's not kid ourselves. They were watching the attractive men that are in charge of promoting the creators of the .2 air vest. So that was one thing that I was a little overwhelmed. And then we lined up and we're like, okay, here we go. Boom! And they pull the cord.
They did catch me a little off guard, too.
Yes, they didn't count to three. There was no, okay, are you ready? It was like, strap it in and pull the ripcord. And, it was quite an interesting sensation. So, like I said, I did kind of have to pee a little bit before we started this segment, and then I didn't have to pee afterwards because I did.
You were funny. When you said that, when we were doing the shot there, when you said that, I almost looked down. I did almost look down. I forgot.
Nice.
I forgot we were
nice.
On video.
Yeah, that was...
Well, there was so
exciting.
Much to talk about from this weekend, but I got to ask you about this because I've been dying since I saw you posted on your own Facebook page the other day. First of all, on the way to Philadelphia, I picked you up at the airport, and one of your comments was that you got the lucky seat. You got the middle seat on Southwest, and you happen to have a very large person sitting beside you, so you were kind of squished in.
The
chance of that happening twice on both legs of the flight are slim to none. But with Jamie's luck, apparently it happened on the way back again. Tell us about that.
Glenn, I posted the picture on Facebook, on my Facebook page, because, and by the way, it's very hard to sneak a photo of the people sitting next to you without them seeing. I sit down, and of course, you have to check in at Southwest, early so you can get a good seat. Well, I didn't check in early enough, and I ended up having this whole row to myself, the very last row in the very back of the plane by the bathroom.
I was going to say in front of the bathroom, yeah.
Yeah, of course, right in front of the bathroom, and it stinks and everything, but whatever, I had a whole row. So I climb in, and I go sit next to the wall, to the window, because I like to lean on the window and try to sleep. Then these two, not one, but two rather large, and I'm not saying rather large, I'm saying incredibly large women, come and decide that they're going to take the two seats, the middle and the aisle. So I am basically about to be pinned in for a 4.5-hour flight to Denver with no hope of getting out. So they go to sit down, Glenn. I'm not kidding you. They were the last two people on the plane. I thought I had scored a whole row to myself. When I see this happening, I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. So they go to sit down, and they didn't fit. And it became a bit of a problem.
They didn't fit in the seat?
They did not fit in the two seats that were there. Okay, I'm not kidding you. They sit down, and they couldn't get their seatbelts buckled. The flight attendants had to come over because the girl at the end was in the middle of the aisle as well. If you've ever seen a picture of that, you know it's true. They were sitting in the aisle. They couldn't get their seatbelt buckled, so they had to get the seatbelt extenders to strap these ladies in.
Jeez.
Now, again, it's one thing, Glenn, if you have a thyroid problem when you're traveling, and I understand, and I would have felt sorry for you, but they had not one, not two, not three, but four bags of McDonald's food for this 4.5-hour flight.
Oh, my gosh.
Four bags of food. That was what was in their life. So I get stuck on the end, in the end, and they can't fit. And then the flight, I mean, at this point, the plane is delayed because they can't get these ladies in the seats. And so I said, well, do you guys want me to sit in the aisle? I didn't know what to say because they were like, you guys are going to have to leave the plane and buy two seats apiece. So I ended up, I was like, I'll get out. I'll go find somewhere else to sit. And I see in front of me that there is a seat available in the middle. So I asked them, and it turns out they were together. And I was like, do you guys mind if I sit with you? And they were laughing so hard. They were like, we've been waiting for you. They were like, we've been listening to this whole thing and just dying. Because, again, the flight attendants don't know what to say to these women because, again, I mean, I couldn't get out of the seat because I said, can you guys move all your McDonald's bags out of the seat so I can get out? So it was not that they were, you know, they had a problem. It was they were definitely over consumers. the plane took off 15 minutes late. The flight attendant said, you get whatever you want for free on this airline trip. They gave me free drinks the entire time, free food. They were like, here's some extra peanuts for you. Giving me all this stuff because I kept them from basically having to cancel the flight by moving. I mean, it was hysterical. And now it's hysterical. But the odds of that happening to me are just fantastic, apparently, because it happened twice.
Oh, geez. Speaking, I'm going to pee myself here, Jamie. Only you, Jamie. Only you.
Yeah, so before you go feeling sorry for them, they were definitely prepared food-wise, calorically prepared for the 4.5-hour ride.
Yeah, yeah. Note to self, don't ever book an airline flight on the same airplane as Jamie. we're gonna use that whole company security thing. Oh, you never put everybody from the company on the same airplane in case there's a crash. No. Just don't fly with Jamie because then you won't fit.
No, if you could fly with me and just sit next to me, please.
And Jamie is the one that everybody wants to sit beside because she's little and teeny and weeny, and she barely takes up the whole seat. So she's the one that when people are coming in, you go, please have it look like Jamie. Please have the person be like Jamie, and that's the one you want to sit beside you. The funny part about this, and then we'll have to go to a caller. We have a caller on here with a Blizzard report. The funny part about this is you met your husband on a flight that you sat beside him on the way to Philadelphia. So these flights weren't quite as successful as those, and he was probably happy about that.
Yeah, he was like, I can't believe you're flying to Philadelphia. That's, you know, that's where we met, on a plane to Philadelphia. And so then I'm like, here, honey, here's who I sat next to. Enjoy. So, yeah, my luck on airplanes has officially run out. And I would like to tell you that the couple I sat with on the way to Denver also were flying to Phoenix. And we made instant friends once they heard the whole thing. And they said, listen, you are going to sit with us in our row on the way to Phoenix because we cannot let that happen to you again. But yeah, it's on my Facebook page. I'll have to tag put it on the show page because it was definitely an exciting adventure, and Southwest thanked me profusely through the entire rest of the flight for not delaying the flight and just moving. I was like, no, it's fine. Thank you. I'd be happy to move.
All right, let's go to Wayne Williams. Hi, Wayne. Good morning. And are you a little blizzardy where you are?
Yes, sir. Good morning to you. We're a little blizzardy. For once, the weather service was accurate.
I don't know if that's blizzardy. Good or not.
We are in Whitewater, Wisconsin, so we are 30 miles north of the Illinois border and only about 120 miles, say, to the northwest of Chicago. So we have gotten a pretty good brunt of it. And, I'm sitting here. While I was waiting on you, the dog wanted out. Of course, when he saw outside, he wasn't sure whether he was going on out or not because there's a five-foot drift right at the back door. So I had to encourage him to go on out, please. But we're probably in the, I'd say, 15, 16, 17 inches out of this thing since last night. And the winds, though, got up to 50 miles an hour, so it's piled it up pretty high.
You said 5 foot drift outside your door?
Yeah, yeah. My snowblower is not that tall, so I don't know what I'm going to be digging a little bit here, but not until the winds subside. We've got another couple hours before the winds start to subside, but it's brought everything to a screeching halt. I had a couple of people that were looking for me to maybe appear at Equine Affair in Pomona, California, but there is no way. I don't think there'll be an airplane moving in Chicago or Milwaukee for at least 24 hours yet. So I was listening to the airplane story, and, of course, with all the flying I do, I can relate to
I bet you can.
many of those stories. But it's pretty brutal right now. Our horses are 3 miles away, so I still have to figure out if I've got to get to the barn in a little bit, and I don't know exactly how I'm going to do that yet. So. But, you know, I'm just kind of waiting for a snowplow to make one pass down the road, and then we'll be there. I mean, they're not hurting yet. I took care of them last night good. But it's just, it's going to be.
Now, were they in the barn? Are they installed?
They're in the barn tonight. Normally they're not, but I put them in last night and decided to leave them. And glad I did because, I believe in letting a horse be a horse. But when it's severe like this, no, they're in the barn. So.
Okay, I have a question for you then, Wayne. Being a you're a horseman. Do you blanket your horses on nights like this?
Well, the two older mares are blanketed. The rest of them aren't. No, they're in the barn.
Oh.
As long as a horse is out of the wind and out of the weather, you know, they're going to be fine. The two older mares, one's 28 and one's 30. They're both in pretty good shape for their age, but they have a little more trouble maintaining body heat in this kind of weather. So for the last two winters, I've thrown blankets on them for the winter. See, I'm not in the mode of, I don't have to have them show ring ready by March. So, you know, we don't necessarily blanket them up. It just depends. But if they're totally out of the wind and totally out of the snow or the rain, out of the weather, then they're fine. And ours are all in it's a converted dairy barn, actually, in Wisconsin. So they're all kind of in a row together, and we've got a small area actually plasticed off so the body heat from all the horses stays in that area. So they can generate some pretty good heat among them, you know, in there. So, but
now,
they're all in out of the wind. As long as they're out of the wind, out of the snow, out of the rain, you know.
You have to remember.
Go ahead.
You keep saying that, but all I'm hearing is that Wayne Williams is a big softy.
You're right, I know. But you got to remember, horses survived in the wild for centuries without anything.
Not at age 30.
Not at age 30. No, that's why the two older ones are blanketed.
Exactly.
You know, so yes, I'm a softy, you know, and yes, everybody says, well, those horses are too old. Well, they become a part of you after a while. You can't do anything. You got to take care of them, you know. So
absolutely, absolutely.
All we have to do now
is,
go ahead.
All you have to do now is what?
Is figure out how to survive cramped in this house without being able to get out.
You're going to have cabin fever, my friend.
Yeah,
cabin
see, actually,
fever.
When I got the email from Glenn a bit ago about what if you could call in for a blizzard report, I just happened to be on the computer because there wasn't anything else I could do. I've had all the coffee I can handle for the morning, and, you know, so that's kind of it. But you're back home. You're back in Kentucky, right?
Yeah, we're back. Yeah. We're in good shape here. It's just cold, but we didn't get any of the bad. We missed this one for the first time ever.
Well, this one was, Chicago was basically the center of the storm, but we were close enough that we got a pretty good shot of it. And so, yeah, this is probably the worst one we've had in a, you know, in a year or two. I always get tickled. It still hasn't exceeded like 67 and the blizzard of 77. And they make it sound like it's always the worst thing that's ever happened. It's bad. I'm not taking away from the fact that it's bad out there today, and it was bad last night, but it is not the worst that's ever happened. Armageddon is not here yet. You know, I'd be a lot more concerned about the streets of Egypt than I would the snow in Wisconsin. But anyway, it's just fun. So how was Florida? You guys were in Florida at that
Actually, we were in Philadelphia. We wish we were in Florida.
Well, I thought you went to Florida for something. You didn't? Oh.
No, we went to Philadelphia this past weekend, and as I said, we wish we were in Florida.
Oh, was that where that convention where I saw your pictures? Is that where you were at, Philly?
Yes, we were. Yeah, we were in Philadelphia. It
oh, well,
was about 6 feet of. As a matter of fact, the parking lots had about 12, 15 feet of snow piled up everywhere, and Jamie got a little taste of winter so that she would have that, you know, living in Phoenix, she doesn't get too much in the way of winter, but she got a little taste of it this weekend.
Yeah, well, it's not all that warm in Phoenix right now. I got some friends that live out there, and it's in the 30s, I believe, this morning, and it was going to be below freezing tonight, I think, as far down as Tucson.
Yeah, you know what they tell us to do on nights like this is to, you guys are going to laugh, cover your cactus. Yep, cover your cactus because they freeze. So you're supposed to cover the top of your cactuses to keep them from dying. So,
well, you know, you see, you only do that if you really want them. If you don't really want them in your yard, then, you know,
well,
how do you very methodically cover a cactus?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But people have these saguaro cactuses, Wayne, that are worth street value of the big giant saguaros is worth like $10,000.
Oh, yeah, the big ones. The big ones with the arms that come off and everything, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
those are really, really valuable, and they're really pretty. I could see saving those. I really could. I just wondered how you got out there and did it, you know.
Well, people covered them in Christmas lights, so they must be able to cover them in cover them in.
Oh,
that
I'm having all
dangerous.
Kinds of visions of these people covering cactus. This is going. My mind is racing. Oh, geez. So, what's on the horizon for you guys? Where do you head off to for your next big trip? Are you planning south, or what's it doing in Lexington? By the way, got to ask that question.
It's actually not bad here. It's pretty nice. Actually, it's 27 degrees, but very windy. We had the worst wind that I've had in a long time last night. So it's not too bad.
I know my daughter and all my kids are all in Indianapolis, and they you know, they got tons of ice in Indy. They had like 2 and 3 inches of ice solid on the streets, so it got really. Really bad there, and I do. But Lexington is just enough south, another 3 hours down, that you might have escaped it. I just didn't know. Hey, I met a gal that lives in Lexington, and I did a little interview with her on my show just the other day. You heard of the Southern Fried Chicks?
Southern Fried Chicks. I can't say that I have. What do they do?
Well, they're a comedy tour, and they were actually played Whitewater. And she lives in Lexington, and she is the leader of the group. Her name is Etta May, and she is the poor white trash of the Southern Chicks. they are the what she describes it. We are the blue collar comedy tour on PMS. Okay. But they were hilarious. I got an interview with her for my show, and they were really hilarious. But she couldn't wait to get back to Lexington because she was going to kill her manager for booking her in Wisconsin in January.
Well, Wayne, thank you for giving us a call. We have to run here. We have Sean Flaherty coming up. So.
All right. Well, you just take care of Sean. He's probably in a warmer climate. But, yes, it is it's pretty bad out here with 5-6-foot drifts and snowing and still windy. And we've got another 3 or 4 hours, and then it'll be over. So,
all right. Okay. All right. Thank you, Wayne.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's Wayne Williams. So we have this half hour is sponsored by Back on Track. You know, Jamie, Back on Track, we got to meet Bo from Back on Track this weekend. I think that was the first time you ever met him, right?
It was, and I got to kind of see what his Back on Track products are all about. And I'm going to tell you, very cool stuff. I mean, it's science and technology, and like Helena said, I am the poultice queen, and they also have a pair of standing wraps that you can wrap around your horse, and because it has that ceramic, it's got ceramic in it, although it's soft, it increases the blood flow and eliminates the need for poulticing. So I thought that was a very cool thing. And
wow,
also... Yeah, and also they have the blankets with the ceramic in it. And the ceramic is located in places like the shoulders and along the top of the back and throughout the hips. So that increases the blood flow as well. And like Bo told me, he goes, you know, if the upper body's moving, it's going to move through the lower body as well. So you don't even have to wrap sometimes when you put those blankets on. And by blanket, they're like sheet thin, you know. So I learned a lot about the Back on Track products, and they've got some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, if you're looking for a therapeutic product for your horse or your – actually, they also have therapeutic products for your dog and for yourself, for humans as well. And a lot of people don't realize that they have products for all three categories there, and they're all listed on their website. So backontrackproducts.com, you can see all of their different products. And we thank Bo for continuing. I got to spend a little bit of time chatting with him this weekend. And, you know, we appreciate him continuing to sponsor Horses in the Morning.
Absolutely. That's how we get to do this show. So we appreciate all of our sponsors. And it was great to meet Bo and see the list. Did you see the list that was on the wall, Glenn, of all the riders that they sponsor that basically endorse Back on Track? It was the who's who of... I mean, the professional riding world, from hunters to jumpers to eventers to dressage riders to reiners, you know. So it was really exciting to see all the people that really get on board with Back on Track's products.
Well, thank you, Bo. We appreciate it. And we're up with our first guest of the day here. We have one of the winningest reiners of all time. I got to spend a little bit of time chatting with him on the 2010 radio show. Before the World Equestrian Games, we chatted with him a couple of times, and we have a lot to congratulate him for. So let's get Sean Flaherty on the line here. Hi, Sean, and welcome to Horses in the Morning.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Where are you at right now in the country?
I'm actually in Ohio. Actually in my arena, but it's pretty nasty outside.
Yeah, we just had a caller call in from Ohio who said it's not much fun up there with all the ice.
We have a lot of ice. My driveway's probably got about 2 inches of ice on it, and thank God my arena's heated.
Okay, Sean, I have to congratulate you for something. Then I have a question. I have to congratulate you for going over the $4 million mark in winnings, and, you know, that is just unbelievable. But then I have a question. Why the heck aren't you in Florida?
Well, I got a good client down there, and he asked me the same thing. But they had some bad weather here a couple weeks ago, so I think the whole United States has been hit with a little bit of bad weather. So I won $4 million right here. I better stay right here and stay at home.
Glenn, come on.
Yeah.
Why would he go to Florida when he's standing inside his heated indoor arena? Hello. I wouldn't go anywhere either. I'd sleep in that thing.
I have before.
That's just when you're in trouble, right?
Exactly.
Sean, there's another thing to congratulate you for, and that is I saw that you found out just here not too long ago that you're going to be inducted into the National Reining Hall of Fame.
Yes, that is so cool, and it's such an honor to get inducted to that. You know, my peers that are already there, it's really special, and it's something that I've always wanted to be there with those guys. My brother got inducted, I believe it's been 2 or 3 years ago now, so it's a huge honor.
Well, and not only that, Wimpy's Little Step. That's a horse that you rode back in 2002 to the Open Futurity and a bunch of other. What that one was a $1 million or $2 million winner too, wasn't it?
Yes, he actually won $150,000 or $175,000 that night, and that horse is he's produced offspring. I think he's won over $2 million.
Wow!
But he's been a phenomenal horse. He's produced me some great horses. He produced a horse called Wimpy's Little Chick. That's the winningest horse of NRHA of all time. I think she's believed she's won $525,000. But that horse has been great to me in my career.
One of the things, Jamie, I have to tell you about Sean, and I got to see this a little bit over at the World Equestrian Games because I got to see him a lot. I went and watched all the reining, and, of course, we had the press, so we got to be behind the scenes a little bit. And Sean has more fun doing his job than anybody I've ever seen. He carries on. He's funny. He cracks up jokes. He just is the life of the party, and that's at a competition.
Yeah, well, thank you. I do thoroughly enjoy horses, and I do really enjoy what I do.
You do. Well, you have a great job, for sure. Now, you're going to keep it up. You breed. You have a breeding program over there at the farm in Ohio, which should be in Florida. And and you breed, you ride, you do all of that. Do you plan on just keeping on going?
You know, I do plan on keeping on going. I do truly love the competition and the showing the most. You know, we do, I got my own brood mares here. We don't stand any studs here. I send all of them off to the breeding farm. But I really love the competition. I love that the most. And hopefully I can just keep myself on some nice horses and keep going.
You know, you're doing something.
Oh, my God.
I was going to say you're doing. Go ahead, Jenny.
Oh no, I'm on Sean's website, which is thegreenshirt.com, and I would like to let you know that I'm interested in buying Tivio's Little Dunnet. He's got horses for sale online, and because clearly, as a lower level eventer, I am in the wrong sport because he has a 6-year-old Palomino gelding with lifetime earnings of $60,000. Okay, my horses have never earned a penny. They just spend it. So I would like to come out and try Tibio's Little Dunnet, the 6-year-old Palomino gelding with earnings of $60,000. My God.
Well, come on, wait for a couple weeks when the ice goes away, but I would love to have you guys come out. You can bring the whole radio show and everything. I'd love that.
Oh, my God, we're there as soon as it warms up a little bit. But we could just camp out in your indoor heated riding arena. That would be fine.
That would be awesome. Our industry is awesome as far as the NRHA goes. It gives us an opportunity as riders to earn $4 million, and I can't thank the officials for that enough, and all of our sponsors. I mean, it's Arenas is a personal sponsor of mine, but we've got some great people behind our organization. We really do.
Yeah, all of the English riders get really jealous when they see the press releases of how much you guys win.
Well, I can't say anything, but thank you. How's that?
And try raining.
Exactly. As big as I am, I wouldn't look good in those tight pants, so this is the only opportunity I got.
Sean, I got to tell you that my my cousins live in Texas, and Samantha Tippett is going to be a big, fancy, up-and-coming reiner. She just got her first reining horse, and I am having so much fun with watching her, actually, because a lot of the reining competitions, even for, you know, newbie reiners, are broadcast live online. So I've gotten to see her compete with her reining horse online, and I really just think that reining has got it figured out as far as making things exciting and making things fun. You know, you go to a dressage show, which, you know, I've competed at a million of them, and nobody cheers. You're not supposed to cheer. You're supposed to be quiet. These reining guys get going, and people start hooting and hollering, and it's drinking beer and having a great time, and And I just think it's such a fun sport. Do you agree, Glenn?
I agree. Absolutely.
Cool. And thank you so much. We do appreciate your guys' support. And it is fun for the crowd. And we do try to make it fun for our clients and everybody. You know, it's pretty serious on our side of when we got to compete like we do. You know, there's so many good horses, so many good riders, but it's good to see the public enjoying our sport and having fun with it.
All right, so I have a question for you, Sean. If we come up there to do the morning show from your heated, warm barn there in Ohio sometime, can we get Jamie and Jennifer on a reining horse?
Most definitely. If you guys get over here, I'll definitely get them on a horse. That will not be a problem.
You have to teach me how to ride it, though, because I think the buttons are a little different than my horse.
I'll give you a personal lesson to you. Just make sure you get over here.
All right, Sean. Thank you so much. We appreciate you being on with us, and good luck this year.
Hey, thank you, guys. It's great to talk to you guys, and thank you so much. And you guys stay warm.
All right, thanks, Sean.
Thanks.
Sean Flaherty, you can find his website at thegreenshirt.com. And he also has a neat, we didn't get a chance to ask him about it, but he does have a neat program where you can learn. It's an online training course. So he calls it the virtual clinic series that you can do online right at thegreenshirt.com. Well, you ready to go take your reining lesson there, Jamie?
You know what? I want to ride a reining horse so bad. And like I was telling you, my cousins in Texas, on my bucket list was to barrel race in Texas. And she has a barrel horse, and they're teenagers. And so I go out there, and I got to barrel race in Texas. And I thought that, you know, check one off the bucket list. But now they've got reining horses. So I'm like, now I have to rein in Texas. But Ohio would work just fine, too.
Well, that's pretty cool.
$4 million.
You guys, you and Jennifer could get a lesson with the winningest reiner of all time. I mean, wouldn't that be cool?
I'd love it. That'd be fantastic. I'm in.
All right, well. I hear Jennifer laughing. I assume you'd like that, too.
I'm just imagining myself giving the horse the wrong cue for that spin, you know, and they start going around at about lightning speed. I really would need to wear my helmet because that horse is going to spin right out from under me. I'm going to be on the ground.
Yeah. And Jennifer, we would be the only people in helmets.
Yeah,
so
I think we would.
We'd have to have one of those. They need to come up with a cowboy hat that's a helmet, and then we'd be okay.
Yeah, there we go. Challenge.
And a .2 air vest.
One of those.
Yeah. Yeah, because that sucker would start spinning, and it'd go to the left, and I'd stay right in the middle.
Yeah.
Right on the ground.
We had they had a try a reiner, if you remember right, at the World Equestrian Games. It was so popular that they had so many people signing up for it that they had to do a lottery. You had to put your name in a hat, and they drew names out every day, and they called you to say whether you won your chance to go ride. That's how popular. Oh, yeah, it was hugely popular. They had thousands of people signing up, and they weren't expecting that, so they ended up with this lottery system where our friend Michelle, who we've been talking about because her horse Sprite's been sick. By the way, Sprite finally, after another week and another surgery in the hospital, came home yesterday. So your prayers going for Sprite. But she tried it, and it was very funny to watch because she was not pressing the right buttons, being the English rider she is. She was not pressing the right buttons at all. That horse wouldn't spin. And the guy said, okay, you got to just let loose. You have to put your feet out. Don't put your heels down. Put your feet up. You know, it was funny.
Yeah.
It was really funny.
It looks like, you know, it's like sitting in the passenger seat of the car and then you put your feet up on the dashboard. That's exactly how they like stop or something. And I know that in English, you're supposed to drop your legs straight down and sit up, you know, and then they lean back and stick their feet out in front of them. So, yeah, it would definitely be a challenge trying to learn how to ride a reiner. But I'm up for it, and I'm sure Jennifer is too.
And what fun that would be doing the show from Sean Flaherty's farm. That would be great. As you can hear, he has quite a personality. I think he'd take over the whole show.
Oh, I think he's fantastic. I that was really fun. So we'll definitely have to do that. And I know, seriously, this horse for sale online, it really, there's a gelding that has won. It's 6 years old, Glenn. 6 years old. It's already won $60,000.
All yours, Jamie, for the low price of $150,000.
Yeah, they don't have a price listed, so that concerns me.
Today's song is brought to you by Pocket Stable. Pocket Stable is the only app that's been created for horse owners who want to keep all of their information, from vaccines to wormings to farriers to dentist visits, together and easily accessible right on your iPhone. You can track weight and get reminders of important events coming up. You can do all of that right on your iPhone for just $3.99. Visit them at pocketstable.com. I thought an appropriate song today would be from Marianne Kennedy, "When It Rains, It Pours." We'll be right back after this song with the horse and also the Social Media Awards. We're going to have them on all the way from England.
By Back on Track. I'm Jamie Jennings. With me, of course, always Glenn the Geek. And we're going to talk to the horse with Christy, and we're going to talk about some biosecurity, and I guess that's going to be an education for all of us here in just a minute. But we wanted to go over some of our favorite products because we were at the American Equine Trade Association in Philadelphia this past weekend, and wanted to talk to you a little bit about what our favorite stuff was. And Glenn?
Yes. Well, let me think. Mine was, I think I mentioned it on the show on Monday. Mine was that Odor No More stuff. It was just incredible stuff. We brought a bag of it home to give it a try over at the barn. But I also brought some of the one for the kitty litter box for the beast. and we're going to give that a try. But it was just incredible stuff. They had a jar of ammonia water, and about 5 inches of ammonia water in this jar, and he poured some of this odor no more. It looks like sawdust in this jar. And first of all, it solidified, which was really cool. But then within seconds, he had us sniff the jar. By the way, when we sniff the jar with the ammonia water, your eyes watered. And then he had us sniff the jar after he poured this sawdust stuff in it, and it smelled like sawdust. It smelled like pine shavings. There was no ammonia odor at all. It was a very effective demonstration. It worked for me, let me tell you.
That's great. It must have some sort of awesome chemical component that is way over my head. I would never understand.
I don't know. You know, I asked him about that, and he said it's all natural, which I thought was interesting. But it just worked, and they make it for kitty litter boxes, and they also make it for stalls and, you know, things like that. But you could use it, I guess, if you had rabbits or, you know, chickens or whatever. But it really does soak up the moisture and sort of makes it hard. And then you don't need much of it in a stall. You just sprinkle it on the areas of the wet spots. And after you clean the stall, you scrape away where the wet spots are. You sprinkle this stuff on, and you just cover it back up again. And you do that every day for about a week, and it sort of builds up. And then you can even cut back how much you're using then. It's neat stuff. I was very impressed.
That's cool. I like it. Some of my students are listening to it.
You ended up spending some money too, I know.
Oh, yeah, I did. Glenn, I did. The Ariat boots that are coming out, fabulous. They're fantastic. I'm so excited. I went ahead and bought some. I had to explain to Chad, he's like, you already have Ariat riding boots. And I said, well, I know, but they're not as comfortable as these. When I go to a show, I hate putting on my tall boots. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. They're uncomfortable, you know, and they fit, but they're just uncomfortable. And the Ariat boots that I bought have a tennis shoe bottom. They're absolutely cool. They zip up the back, so you don't need boot pulls or anything. So that was one of my favorites. I did buy a Charles Owen helmet and a Charles Owen vest because, you know, safety first. Had to be safe, even though Chad says I already had a helmet and a vest. I like these better.
Did you explain to him that you didn't buy the $3,000 saddle that you were looking at?
I did. And I told him, I said, see, so I had some extra money. By not spending money, I saved this money, honey, and then I had to spend some, but I actually saved. He didn't get that logic, Glenn.
No, most of us don't. Horse husbands really don't get that logic. We're kind of like, I think we're being snowed here. But you know what? We back off because we realize we have to stay married to you.
Yeah, and he didn't get it. He wasn't too, I mean, you know, granted it's our money, but I spent my money, so he's fine with it. The other thing I got to tell you, and you've preached about these things for a million times, and I finally got some Redmond Rocks.
And yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's insane. These are rocks that come out of a mine in Colorado,
Utah.
I think.
Utah.
In Utah.
Yep.
And I put them out in a little muck tub out in the pasture. And holy cow, these are horses that will not eat a salt block or a mineral block and won't touch those. One horse, I was like, you have to stop licking those rocks. You're going to have lacerations on your tongue. I mean, this Chili, by the pain horse, licked the rocks for literally 2 hours. And I'm thinking, okay, is he that mineral deficient? But I guess they just really like them too. So after licking and licking and licking the rocks, I went out there thinking they'd be gone. It didn't look like they even touched them.
Now, these are incredible things. They last forever, and the horses just absolutely love them. They're called Redmond Rock, and you can just look up, just Google Redmond Rock, and you'll find a website. But if they have them at the store near you, or you have to order them online, whatever you have to do to get them, because they work, and it's all natural. They're not processed in any way. If they had a video, I don't know if you saw that going at their stand, but they have a video of the mine where they take it out of, and they just chip these rocks off the walls, and that's what they give to the horses. It's got like 80 minerals in it, but it's so tasty. The horses just absolutely love it.
Yeah, they do. So we got I've been telling you that might be one of my top picks, just simply because it's true. They really like it. They really like it. So that was exciting. It was a really fun time, and I learned a heck of a lot. Helena and I learned a lot about saddle fitting. We learned, you know, just nutrition, saddle fitting products, how things work, how businesses work. I feel like I got a business education as well. So I think it's great. We do have on the line, of course, you know, this time every week we do a report with thehorse.com, and Christy is on the line with us. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fantastic, fantastic. So I guess today we're going to talk about biosecurity, and with you, you're going to have Dr. Roberta Dwyer from the Gluck Center. And I have to tell you that I used to work at the Gluck Center at UK.
Did you? Tell us
what
you did.
I had a very fancy, fantastic job. I was in college, and I wanted to go to vet school, so I got a job at Gluck, the Equine Research Center, for those who don't know, and I was kind of a big deal, I'm not going to lie. I was a a test tube washer and a urine collector.
You're going for the high-paying jobs.
I did, and who knew that there was such a science to washing test tubes, but there is. You have to rinse them 7 times with this kind of water, and then rinse them 7 times with this kind of water. It's pretty pretty in-depth. So I pretty much, for my college years, stood around doing dishes, and then we would go to the research farm where these mares all had, you know, bags that were collecting their urine, and I would unhook those and store them, and then rehook another bag. So I was kind of a big deal.
Hey,
well, it's all about having fun.
Christy, yeah. I just marked the time on this so I could take that little segment out and use it out of context in future shows.
Nice. Big
perfect. Fun. You'll have a field day with that one. Well, we wanted to talk a little bit about biosecurity because there are so many opportunities for horses to get sick, whether they travel or don't. It, you know, there's a lot of chances to pass diseases around. And Roberta is the queen of disinfection and biosecurity. So she's a perfect person to talk to us a little bit about this. Oh, and by the way, I went to the University of Kentucky, and Dr. Dwyer was one of my instructors at one point. So we have a lot in common.
Fun.
It was fun. Roberta, tell us a little bit about biosecurity and why it's important to horse people.
Well, biosecurity is, you know, a set of actions that you take on your farm to prevent infectious diseases from coming onto the farm, such as with a newly acquired horse, or if you do have an outbreak of a disease on the farm, of how to contain it to the smallest number of animals possible. So that's, no one wants to deal with diarrhea and coughing and high fevers and those kinds of things at any time of the year. And so that's where biosecurity comes in.
Does that mean I have to watch my water bucket 7 times?
Maybe not 7 times, but I want you to use an alcohol hand foam after you're done.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about biosecurity measures. When should you consider biosecurity? In what situations?
Well, no matter what type of farm you've got, you should consider biosecurity sort of year-round. Of, you know, if you've got a horse, it can become sick. But if you've got new horses that are coming onto the farm, you need to put those animals in quarantine so that if they're incubating a disease, that they will hopefully keep it in a limited area and not to the rest of the resident herd. This time of year, it's especially important to clean and disinfect stalls between foaling mares because those newborns are very susceptible to infections. So keeping that foaling stall clean is very important. When you're traveling to horse shows, trail rides, and you're around many other horses, being aware of how diseases can be contracted is important, and then you're bringing that animal home, and you want to take some precautions before you turn that animal out with the other animals on the farm. And obviously when you've got a sick animal, you're trying to keep that animal as separate from the rest of the herd as possible and doing several specific things with that horse.
So let's talk about that one a little bit because I'm sure everybody who's had multiple horses on a farm has had at least one of them get sick at one point, and it's always fun to talk about. What are some of the things that you should do? What are some of the specific measures that you should take when you're dealing with that sick horse to keep your other horses from getting sick?
Well, it first thing is to call your veterinarian and have that person try to, you know, obtain a diagnosis through some, you know, different types of tests. But my rule of thumb is if you've got a sick horse that's got a temperature, a cough, diarrhea, you know, abscesses forming, is you keep that animal separated from the other animals on the farm, and you consider it contagious to other animals until proven otherwise. So for that, using disposable gloves and booties when you're working with that horse, you know, even separate coveralls, because if a horse that's got influenza sneezes on you, you're not going to get influenza, but you can easily spread that to other horses that you subsequently handle in the barns. Dedicated equipment, separate pitchforks, separate, you know, halters, lead shanks should be used with sick horses, and they should not be used with healthy horses. Keeping that animal sort of in the part of the barn that hopefully isn't quite as congested, you know, maybe an empty stall on each side, is good to prevent, you know, bacteria, potentially bacteria or viruses from spreading to other horses. Hand washing
is really
important.
That's a good question. I was going to ask you that, is how far, because I know that we always try to keep them in a completely separate building even. Is that going overboard? Is the stall on each side enough? Or?
Well, if you've got the luxury of having a separate barn to put a horse that is sick, that's very good, because then you're limiting the contamination of the healthy horses by keeping the large manufacturer's viruses and bacteria in an entirely separate building. If you have that, that's fine. Most people don't have that luxury.
Right.
And so sometimes just keeping them in one end of a barn that perhaps doesn't have horses on one side or the other. It all depends on the setup, and that's why working with your veterinarian to make a plan ahead of time is so important.
Right, okay.
And my two cents, Glenn, added into that is the horse across the aisleway, depending on how far that aisleway is, usually they're 12-foot aisleways, 10-foot aisleways, can also get infected by a cough or a sneeze from that horse. So the ones on either side and the one across from the stall would be preferred. So, again, yeah, luxury if you had a separate building.
Or if you have a barn like we do down here pretty much they have the solid doors, the grated doors, like in the thoroughbred barns doing here in Lexington. So they can't stick their heads out, which avoids some of that too.
Right. And the thing that some people forget is if you've got one horse with a cough in a, let's say, a 12-stall barn, the worst thing you can do is take those other 11 horses and say, well, I'm going to spread them to barns A, B, C, D, and E, because that'll prevent them from getting sick. Well, if they've been in that same barn with the horse with the cough, you have to consider them that they're potentially incubating the disease, or they've had been in touch with it. And so you need to sort of keep them in one place so that you can monitor them and prevent it from spreading all over the farm.
Okay.
Very good. Now, as you're dealing with this horse, if you have to handle other horses afterwards, I know we talked a little bit about gloves and booties and different coveralls and whatnot, but what about some disinfection procedures for, you know, cleaning up yourself, maybe cleaning up the stalls, buckets, the feed tubs, halters, whatever, or maybe even after that horse gets healthy? How do you clean all that stuff up?
Well, since you're already wearing hopefully disposable gloves, booties, and coveralls that are just used solely for that horse, if you do have to work with other horses after handling that one, it's best to really try to keep everything with that horse at that stall, because actually you should be handling healthy horses before you handle the sick horses, so that you aren't that fomite or that thing that is carrying bacteria and viruses to other horses. After that horse becomes healthy, stripping out the stall from everything, cleaning and disinfecting is the next step. And that's a lot of labor, but it'll protect future horses on down the line. And that involves cleaning the surfaces with a detergent, spraying things down, and then spraying on an appropriate disinfectant. That's a lot of work. There's going to be a videotape coming out on thehorse.com about how to do that. All the buckets, the hay nets, the feed tubs, anything else that was in that stall also needs to be cleaned and disinfected and then thoroughly rinsed with water, so that stall can be as clean and low on bacteria and viruses as possible.
Now, we talked we talked a little bit as we were working on this video about disinfectants to use in stables and on tack and whatnot. Quick question for Glenn and Jamie. What do you think is the best disinfectant for a horse farm?
What do you use, James?
I would have to say that I think bleach would be the best.
I think that's probably what we use too, mostly.
And what kind of stall surface? What are your walls made out of?
Ours are made out of wood.
Ours were wood. Okay. You failed that question. Sorry.
Okay.
Bleach is a great disinfectant for like human hospital uses where you've got a non-porous surface like linoleum and glass and porcelain and stainless steel. But when it comes to porous surfaces or surfaces that have dirt and manure and abscess material and disgusting things, as soon as bleach hits organic matter like that or it hits dirt, it is readily inactivated, and so it won't kill anything. So unless you've got...
Really?
As soon as you have a painted concrete block stall that you've spotlessly cleaned, it's good for that because that's a non-porous surface that's been thoroughly cleaned. But you know how hard it is to clean raw wood stalls. At least I do.
I was going to say that unless you're at, you know, Lane's End Farm where they've got 40 people cleaning every stall every single day, I've never seen a stall without poop on the wall, ever.
Right. But if that horse is in that stall and now is healthy and you take him out of that stall, you can go in there and scrub things down with a detergent and water and a scrub brush and get that taken care of.
So plain old, like, laundry detergent, dish detergent?
Right.
What kind of detergent?
Any of the powdered clothing detergent.
So the detergent removes the organic matter.
Right.
So what do you use to remove the virus or bacteria?
Pour straight bleach on a wood stall on the walls, that's not going to kill any bacteria or viruses that are there because they're still organic matter.
So after the organic matter is removed, then what do you do?
Then it's best to talk to your veterinarian to see if they've made a diagnosis of what kind of pathogen you're working with, and
okay.
You choose a disinfectant that will definitely kill that one.
So
and
for
one
the sake
that
of,
has been tested.
For the sake of argument, we'll choose plain old boring influenza, because that's probably a really common one. You know, there's always somebody bringing a snotty nose into the barn.
Right. Good old, right. Influenza is, if you get after it with soap and water, you're going to be able to kill most of it because of the way the virus is structured. And then you rinse that off, and then just to be safe, you know, there's several disinfectants that are on the market that work fairly well in organic matter. Phenols are one of them. And you can spray that lightly on raw wood, not to saturation point, but, you know, a light surface. You just need to realize you're not sterilizing a stall. You're not getting rid of 100% of anything, even if you've got those really nice, very expensive stalls.
Okay.
Non-porous surfaces being the key to the disinfection, basically. Non-porous surfaces and removing the organic matter. And we talked a little bit about
an elbow grease.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You know, scrubbing elbow grease is a very huge part of the cleaning and disinfection process.
Sure. And we talked a little bit as well about if you have raw, it's an unfinished wood surfaces, that you can make it basically a non-porous surface by cleaning it up and then varnishing it with a polyurethane or something so that it is easier to clean in the future, right?
Right, because that does make it a smooth surface. It can be polyurethane or a boat-quality varnish after it's been cleaned and scrubbed up and prepped for that kind of covering. That's a great way to seal up raw wood stalls.
Sure. And I believe in our discussions before the show, you told us that you tend to get a lot of questions about disinfecting pastures.
Yes, I routinely get calls from farm managers and horse owners where they've had a mare or a foal with diarrhea, or they've had a case of strangles, and they say, how do I disinfect my pastures because all my horses were out on pasture? And there is no way, because there are bacteria and organisms in the soil that help the soil remain healthy and grow grass, and there is no way to disinfect a pasture because a pasture is essentially all organic matter. If it was a case of diarrhea and the animal was kept in a pasture for, let's say, a month after it was completely well, going out and picking up manure might lessen, you know, the chances of other horses going into that same pasture and potentially picking up a bacteria. But there's just no way to disinfect a pasture or soil.
Hey, Jamie, I think that, or Christy, I wanted to say that I think Jamie's husband could do it. He's an F-16 fighter pilot. I guarantee he could disinfect that pasture with one pass.
Did you ever want to use it again?
Just drop a bomb on it. We'll be fine.
So does
It'll
the
be
question
sterile.
Is, does he hire out to other horse farms?
Yeah,
that's right.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
thanks, Glenn.
That's a great visualization. So we talked a little bit earlier. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
One of the situations that came up that brought one of those questions to me was a farm that brought up a mare from Louisiana, and she seemed healthy after she got off the van, and they turned her out in a pasture with all the other resident mares who were heavily pregnant, and it turned out that mare from Louisiana was carrying strangles, and she tested positive, and then that strangles outbreak went through 20 mares in that pasture and all of their foals, some of which required many thousands of dollars of hospital bills. And they asked, can we disinfect a pasture? And they were in a rough situation.
Hey, Christy, we only have about 4 minutes left today. Is there something that Dr. Jones would like to add to this today?
Yeah, the strangles was is a very big point as a practitioner. The questions I get all the time is you know, I heard a horse had strangles at such and such a barn, and you know, I don't want to go to that barn. And I think what needs to be pointed out is that it's not capable of living in the environment, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Dwyer, it's, I believe, 10 days is what Dr. Timoney said for the bacteria to live in the environment, a dry environment. I guess a moist environment might be a little bit more than 10 days, but it's actually the horse itself. There's a carrier horse that's in that herd that's supplying the disease.
Right. That's a very good point.
So that seems to be a misnomer that's still out there, is that the farm has strangles on it, but it's not necessarily a farm. There's an actual horse that's a carrier on that farm.
Okay.
I think that's a great point, and that actually leads into something that I wanted us to discuss briefly. It's quarantine periods. How long should you quarantine a new arrival to the farm to make sure he doesn't get the rest of your horses sick?
Well, my general recommendation is 2 weeks, which
seems
like a long
time. Wow, you're generous.
I
say 21 days, but I guess
right.
I'm just a paranoid.
Well, my caveat was if you are really concerned about strangles, you'd be looking at 21 days.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, potential longer incubation time for that disease. I was going to ask you, Aaron, what you suggest. You know, 2 weeks, they usually roll their eyes and say, there's no way, you know, how about 2 days?
Absolutely. Client compliance is the hardest part of it. But I'm pretty emphatic about 2 to 3 weeks. If they can give me 2, I'm dancing. But 3 is what I really try to push for.
Exactly.
Well, we had our pony
that
we thought we had rabies, the state made us 6 months. It was like, huh. That was a long time.
Yeah, that is a long time. And
long
also,
time.
What exactly do we mean by quarantine? Because sometimes I think you see people who believe they're quarantining horses when they have them in a separate paddock, but they can still nose over the fence to other horses. And just because they're in a different paddock, sharing the same fence is not necessarily quarantine.
Aaron, what do you advise your clients on?
Absolutely that. Do not share. They just cannot go nose to nose. I hate the you know, a generalization, because my paddocks here I have at my clinic have enough room for a tractor to go down and turn around and brush hog between them, but it's still not enough distance that if two of them were sitting with their heads over the fence pointing at each other, they'd have maybe 6 to 10 feet between them max, and they could still spread some sort of nasal mucus by coughing or sneezing on each other. So it would have to be a significant 35 feet or more type thing where they're far enough away that they can't pass those diseases back and forth. When I'm just going to throw in, when I was a kid, I rode in this really small 4-H type, it wasn't a 4-H group, but it was a small 4-H type group, and we had a barn, and we actually tacked on the side of the barn, it was a 12 by 12 stall in a paddock by itself, and it said Welcome Barn. And it was used for any new horse. They stayed in there for a month before they get introduced to the rest of the herd and into the barn. And I highly recommend if you have a pasture off by itself, that you just put a little lean-to in there, call it the Welcome Barn, and you've got yourself a little quarantine spot.
That sounds so much nicer than quarantine, too.
Yes, that's put a pot of flowers out front would be great. Hey, guys, we're playing out of time. I want to thank you guys all for coming on. But before you go, Christy, our next segment here that we have coming up, and I'm going to give you a chance to get a plug in, is for the social media awards that AbbeyView Equine is doing, and we have them on the line right now. We're going to be talking about that. And thehorse.com was nominated in Category 12, Most Informative. Was it only one category? Do you remember?
No, I believe we're in the Facebook category as well, I believe.
Okay, so hop on out, vote for thehorse.com for that as well. Thank you, Christy. Thank you, everybody, for being on today. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Hope you have a great day.
All right, bye-bye, guys.
Take care.
All right, that was thehorse.com, and you can find all of the information. They have tons of articles over there as well. Well, Jamie, it's time that we talk about that. Hey, we got a plug-in for the horse. Now we're going to get a plug-in for us. Because, you know, horses in the morning, after all. So it's. I think we have Liam on here. And Liam is from England. He is with the Equestrian Social Media Awards from AbbeyView Equine. Hi, Liam.
Good morning, Glenn and Jamie. How are you?
Well, great. And thank you so much for coming on to talk to us about this. You know, this thing has taken off. You probably can't imagine that it would take off as much as it did.
It's absolutely huge. I can't believe it. We started off initially looking to reward people in the UK and Ireland who put a bit of effort into their social media, people who engage with their customers and actually, you know, give us something that we love to read. And as soon as the Americans, Canadians, New Zealanders, and Australians heard about it, it just went absolutely enormous. It's grown so much. Every day we have about 83 countries looking at the voting page, which is just phenomenal.
Wow. You know, when you first did this, I was watching it from a distance. I was watching it. And it was. I know you had meant it to be only England, and then it started growing. And then I saw you guys start to adapt. And being a web designer and doing that, a media person, I was really watching, and I was going, those guys are scrambling over there to make this work. I could tell behind the scenes that you guys were scrambling a bit.
It was good. The thing is, the finalists were pushing it, and the finalists just gave it legs. And we were being asked for press releases left, right, and center, and quotes, and it was just like, okay, we actually have to, you know, put our pens down on our day jobs for a few hours a day and actually properly dedicate some time to this. And it's just it's exploded. It's unbelievable.
Congratulations. Did you have any idea that it would get to this?
Well, the main catalyst, it would have been a really nice contest, something that the equestrians in the UK and Ireland would have enjoyed, a little pat on the back. But the catalyst really was whenever the Chronicle of the Horse and Horse and Hound got wind of it, and it's just they were the catalyst. I'm definitely sure of it.
Yeah, well, you got about 200,000 people between them, so you were bound to grow it pretty well. Yeah, and. You know, you really did. I think next year, if you do this, you're gonna probably redesign it a little bit to be a little easier on yourselves. Because I know the way you did it turned out to be a lot of work. and I know you'll fix that for next year. Tell us a little bit about Abbey View Equine. What is Abbey View Equine?
Well, Abbey View is we're an equestrian web development agency. We specialize in easy-to-use websites for horsey people, mostly in the UK and Ireland, but we have a couple of clients and a couple of prospective clients in America and South Africa, bizarrely. So we're there to help horsey folk get on the web without jargon, without a load of nonsense or any huge bills. It's just straightforward. This is what you need to do. Here's a really easy to use tool that you can do all yourself. Away you go.
Well, cool. What made you want to do this social media thing? Where did you come up with the idea?
Well, it was actually it's a joint effort between Abbey View Equine and Rhea Freeman PR and marketing. Rhea is a client of ours, and she sent me a Twitter direct message suggesting that we do an awards for social media, and I just absolutely loved it. I knew that the world would love it. So we sat down, and within 5 hours, we had the bare bones of a strategy, and we were ready to launch. And literally, she sent me the direct message at 9 a.m. in the morning, and by 10 p.m., we had launched it. And then the very next day, Horse and Hound got wind of it and started pushing it, and then it just grew from there, really.
Yeah, when you got Horse and Hound involved, it's going to grow from there.
Oh, absolutely,
for sure.
Yeah. I'm really good because yeah.
Oh no, go ahead.
Because they're on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter, and they're. The key to social media is whenever you actually engage with people. And for such a big organization that have, you know, much better things to be doing, they're really, really, really proactive, and they're doing really, really well as a result of it.
Oh, absolutely. Now, question real quick, and then we've actually got a person on the phone who's nominated. But what?
Brilliant.
I guess we all want to know, what do we win if we win?
Well, this year you get a certificate that you can put up in your office or your barn, just to show off that, you know, the global equestrian community actually appreciate what you're doing on there. Next year, I'm sure we'll vamp it up a little bit. We're kind of, you know, it's the accolades, you know, it's the fact that the global equestrian industry has given you a nod.
bragging rights.
Exactly.
I was kind of hoping that, you know, with that accent, you'd get all Dr. Evil and go, $1 million. But
yeah, we don't. I'm Irish myself. We don't do evil. We just do nice.
I love the Irish. I knew I loved you from the beginning, and the accent is to die for. But let me move on because I'll get all girly. We've got Katie from Kentucky Performance Products on the air, and of course, Kentucky Performance Product is nominated in the category of best use of social media by a feed company. So how you doing, girl?
Hey, I'm good. How are y'all doing?
Oh, fantastic. Talking to, you know, it's a good day when you get to talk to the Irish. Oh.
Exactly. I can't argue with that. Well, I was just calling to tell Abbey View and Liam and his colleagues, thank you, first of all, for holding the Social Media Awards. We are thrilled to be a part of it, and we're thrilled to be nominated, and we really thank our fans for entering us in this awesome competition.
Yeah, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
I voted for you.
I'm sorry?
I voted for you.
Well, I'm glad because I voted for you for a very hot competition, too. So.
Oh, good. And I voted 5 times. Oh, no, I can't. I tried and they wouldn't let me.
All your different aliases.
You're only allowed to vote once in the ESMAs.
Yes.
Liam had to ruin my fun.
Well, I'm
rules
glad that Jamie asked
fun.
About the award. I was going to ask what the award was going to be and suggest a wonderful trip to Hawaii or something to get me out of the cold.
I wish.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I think if anybody's gone to Hawaii, it's Liam after this.
Yeah, well,
no, no, no.
I'm looking out the window in Manchester, and it's here's my little weather update. You guys have had ice storms, and we're currently looking incredibly tropical. Whenever you played that song about raining and pouring or whatever, the heavens just opened here, and it's absolutely lashing.
Oh, geez.
Have fun.
All right. Thank you, Katie. Vote for Kentucky Performance Products in category number. I'm looking for it here. Do you remember?
Number seven.
Category number seven.
Category
All right.
seven.
That's
well,
use
thank
of
you
a
guys.
Piece. Thanks, Katie.
Bye, Katie. Good luck.
Now
we
Sam,
have to
must,
clarify.
I'm...
Go ahead, Jane.
I was just going to say, I like the fact that you limit to one vote per person, and you have to put your email in so everybody knows. But what about the people like Glenn who have 15 different email addresses?
Well, we've got a few tricks up our sleeves, and we've actually caught a few people out cheating, very, very naughty. I'm waving my finger at you. I'm not going to say, but we know whenever people are cheating. Yeah, and we're also looking at IP addresses, and whenever there's a number of very, very, very similar email addresses from one IP address, automatically they all get discounted. You can vote once.
Darn it!
We would... Sorry! We would advise that people have a look at the page. It's abbyvequine.com/awards. There's 15 categories in total. Many of them have been split into two groups, UK and Ireland and international. Every single person, if you scroll your cursor over their name, it links through to one of their social media platforms. So you can have a look and, you know, discover some new favorites, because it really is a global competition now. And you might find something that, you know, find a new favorite.
Well, I wanted to mention that we are in the category 15, Horses in the Morning under the International, the best at social media newcomer. And I guess there wasn't one for radio, so we ended up in the newcomer category because we had just started back when you did this. So we want all of our fans to go out and vote for us. Go to abbyvequine.com/awards, and we'll post it on our Facebook page here again today, too. Vote for us
Very
under
good.
Horses in the Morning. Because we're supporting here, and wouldn't it be cool if we could change our opener, that little song we do at the beginning, to say, Horses in the Morning, the best in the world.
That would be fantastic, actually. I've got a little story that I heard over the weekend. There's a saddlery from just down the road from us here in the northwest of England called Abbey Saddlery. They're actually... through to the finals in the category for best saddlery, and someone walked up to them at the American Equestrian Trade Association show in Philly over the weekend, and congratulated them on getting through to the finals. So I was they tweeted that someone had come up, and I was very chuffed. So people are talking about it across the world. So it is bringing the global equestrian community together.
Well,
Yay,
that's terrific.
That's fantastic.
Congratulations. You've done a great job with this, and we're looking forward to winning. And
Our trip to Ireland.
And a trip to Ireland,
Oh, you should plan a trip to Ireland anyway. It's gorgeous. Lovely country.
I got to tell you, you need to send me an email on the places to go, because we think that's our next vacation. My husband and I are currently childless, and we're trying to plan every travel move we can before any of that changes. So we were talking about Ireland last night. So I'll be in touch with you, Liam. I want to know the best pubs to go to.
Oh, but they're all the pubs are amazing. But the one place that you have to go to is County Down. It's actually in Northern Ireland, and it's where St. Patrick was enslaved. He was a slave brought over from Wales, and that's where he lived, and he set up his first church in County Down. And I'm from a place called Downpatrick, which is where he used to herd his sheep.
Oh wow! So see, it's
yeah,
so it's historical.
Just,
I love
indeed.
It,
see?
Liam.
County Down. There we go. The Irish Tourism Board owes me a fortune now.
Yeah, with the $7 I'll spend getting a Guinness there.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam.
Thank you
so
Liam.
Much for being a part of Horses in the Morning.
thank you so much for having me on.
All right, bye-bye, Liam. We'll talk to you after we win.
Bye now. Good luck, everyone.
Thanks.
All right, so if you want to vote for us, it's Abbey View Equine, again, /awards. Go vote for Kentucky Performance Products, and some of our other sponsors are on there as well. And we would appreciate your vote, too. So I only have one more question for you before we wrap up today, and that is, did your husband survive? Everybody, the animals, the puppies, the dogs, the kittens, the dogs and the chickens and the horses were all alive. He did a good job. He didn't kill anything.
You know what? I have to just give a public thank you. He did so well. I come home, after my exciting adventures on the airplane, frustrated. He's there at the airport. He always parks and comes inside the terminal. He picked me up. And I come home and we had, like a hole in our pasture that, a low spot. He filled that in. He drug my arena. He cleaned the stalls. He cleaned the pasture. My house was spotless. I can't even thank him enough. He did so much work while I was gone. The place looks great. The horses were happy. Everybody ate. Everybody got food. The one thing he didn't do was he forgot to collect the chicken eggs. So by the time I got here, I have like 14, eggs that were in a bucket that they all laid just one on top of another, on top of another. So the only thing he didn't do was collect eggs. And he's like, sweet, I was wondering why we were running out. So he did a fantastic job. He did everything and more. So, I know I'm disgustingly sweet and in love with my husband. But, it's awesome. He's fantastic.
Yay, Chad. And she didn't meet anybody new that she really even wanted to talk to on the airplane on the way to Philadelphia. So all is good. Be sure to listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. The one we recorded the most of over the weekend is the Tack and Habit Radio Show. That's the one all about products. We recorded 22 different segments that we're going to be putting out over the next couple of months on that show. You're going to want to take a listen about all the new products coming out on the market. And, of course, you can follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. And we are on Twitter at Horse Radio.
Of course, if you missed the live show, listen to recorded ones on our website, affiliate websites, iTunes. You don't have to miss any episodes. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. So say goodbye, Glenn.
Goodbye, everybody. Wear your helmet and ride safe if you get out of the house at all with the 10-foot snowdrifts in front of you.